Thank you. see that people that are of a particular religion, they're following those religions. Very important. Because, of course, in Kali Yuga, there's so many religions. And you find someone who's following their particular religion, very rare. Prabhupada would quite often deal with people with Christians. And he would always ask them, and your religious system, one of the principles is thou shalt not kill. Well, why are you killing? And he never got a good answer. So much irreligious. Dharma holds the kind of harmonium and shamanism. That this system, it kicks out all pretentious religious. Cheating religious. And it's understood only by those who are pure of heart. Pure of heart. So that's another attractive feature of this Krishna consciousness movement. When I heard that the devotees were following the four regular principles and chanting 16 rounds a day, I was like, wow, this is real. Some showbox. This is real, serious. And that the devotees were happily practicing Krishna consciousness, following the instructions, even made it more solid. So, also in Hinduism, there's so many people who were so called Hindus, but then so much cheating. There's one stated by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Suchi hoy, uchi hoy, yodi Krishna, vanchi, tete. Suchi hoy, uchi hoy, yodi Krishna, tete. Uchi hoy, suchi hoy, yodi Krishna, vanchi. That one may be born into a very paka, Brahmana family. But if one is not living the life of the Brahmana, then he's not Suchi. Suchi means pure. But he's Uchi. Uchi means very copper, extra shoes. So if one is not following, then he's not Suchi. He's Uchi. And someone may be born into a very Uchi family, like most of us. But if he practices the teachings, Krishna, as they are given, then he's not Muti, he's Suchi. I remember I was distributing books one time at Miami Airport, and I approached one of these gentlemen, and I was showing him the Bhagavad Gita. He said, oh, I'm Brahmana. And he showed me his thread. And he kind of looked like a little bit of a shady character, so I asked him, do you eat meat? He said, well, I take off my Brahmin dress and I eat meat. And then I put it back on. So these are Kali Yuga Brahmin. Not a real Brahmin. And I was, earlier this year, I was in Russia and I was going back to India. And one Indian gentleman was sitting next to me, and I was reading from the Kindle Srimad Bhagavatam. He noticed I was reading Srimad Bhagavatam, so he was looking over, and he was also reading. He said, you don't mind if I read off? No, we're both then, trying to put it over. So we're both reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So he said, yes, I was born Brahmana, and my family is Brahmana. But when he came onto the plane, I noticed he had some cartons of whiskey he put up on top. But you're Brahmin, why are you drinking this whiskey? It's not good. He said, every once in a while I drink some. But you're Brahmin, it's not good. So very difficult, actually, to find a real Brahman. Fortunately, we had the great example of Srila Prabhupada, who was not just a Brahmana, but he was a Vaishnava. See, one may be a Brahmana, but that doesn't mean that he's a Vaishnava. When one is a Vaishnava, that's automatically a Brahmana. Because the Vaishnava means that he's following the teaching of Krishna, very practically. So this is the mercy of Krishna that we come in contact with a pure Brahmana who wasn't interested in just being a show. Prabhupada was once in India, traveling around preaching. And they went to one city, and the devotees found out about one sadhu who was practicing the austerity of Bono. He had not spoken in 25 years. So they told Prabhupada, he hadn't spoken for 25 years. Prabhupada said, this is very good. He said, all these sadhus, so-called swamis, they should take this vow of Bono. Because when they do speak, they speak all nonsense. The Prabhupada appreciated what they were taking. But the devotee also, he practices Bono. Because when one speaks only of Krishna, this is also Bono. Anudvegam karunapapya satyam kriya vikantya buddhim jnanam manmeo satyam. That this is some of the austerity of speech. To speak only that which is given to faith, to repeat the basic virtues. That's not easy because it comes very most difficult to control. Very difficult. And therefore, so many people, they speak for dog. There's Krishna Gita, there's for dog. And now with all these millions and billions and billions of cell phones, there's so much more for dog. So much more. There was one interviewer that asked one teenage girl, how much time do you spend speaking on yourself, average, daily? She said, about 6 hours. 6 hours is about. So much for Dhamma in the world. So we're trying to help people understand that what is most important is to speak about Krishna. The Tantrasantam from a various Sambhuddha, Rabatri, Karma, Sayam. The Yosemitas, the Bhargavati, Shadhara, the Bhakti, and the Kramishi. Devotees of the Lord, they take great pleasure in hearing about Krishna in the association of other devotees. Mamaviri, the wonderful pastime of Krishna. And this is very, very pleasing to the ear, to the heart. The Tantrasantam, all the various Tantra of the Bhagavad card of Sayana. The Yosemitas of the Bhagavad Bhagavad, Shraddha, the Bhagavad Krishna. And simply by the hearing the glory of the Christian association of other devotees, one becomes liberated. Such a powerful process. Just hearing the glory of the Christian. The pure glory of Krishna, the unadulterated, pure glorious Krishna, one becomes liberated. And one gains great faith in Krishna. Faith is very important. It's what keeps us. This keeps us going. How do we gain that faith? By hearing, by chanting, by association. Sometimes the non-devotees, they say this, you know, this religious system that you guys found, that is just fake. It's blind faith. But there's also something called blind doubt. Blind Digo, they doubt so much, but what? Why not investigate and solidify your doubt? You know, you're just blindly doubting. But a sign of intelligence is that one will investigate. That's a sign of intelligence. Don't just blindly doubt. We're not blindly just accepting. We're searching throughout all these Vedic literatures and we're finding so much evidence. But people, science communities like to have this evolution theory. Although it's evolution theory, still, it's taught in universities all over the world. But science means that there's observable evidence, right? Science means observable evidence. But there's no observable evidence for the evolution theory. It's speculation. But it's taught in universities all over the world, and if you speak against evolution at a university, oh man, it's like blasphemy. It's like blasphemy in the science industry. Very offensive, you know, they become very offensive. Question the evolution theory. But it's a theory. Why is it called a theory? If it's a fact, why is there peace in so much like it's a fact? But it's a theory. And you speak against it, oh, very offensive. But the Big Bang theory, although it's taught also, the Big Bang theory is taught in all universities. But again, there's no observable evidence. Because apparently, I don't know if you know, but this theory is like so ridiculous. They say that there was a point. There was a point, a very small point, and that very small point expanded. Why it expanded? Again, where did the point come from? We don't know. So, but from this point, which even makes it even more ridiculous, is from this point, it grew. And somehow, from these points, planets came out. People, birds, animals, suns, moons. I mean, it's just the most ridiculous thing. It's just like unbelievable that people believe this. Yeah. Like I say, scientists are the most intelligent, stupid people you'll ever be. Very intelligent, but still so stupid. I mean, how could anybody believe this? It comes to this point, all this amazing creation, just like the star, everything, just, and the moon, the sun, everything is just so much in order. It's unbelievable. It's amazing. Just to give you an example here, I was visiting my family one Christmas Eve many years ago. And this particular Christmas Eve, there was a full moon. So the astronomers, they got out their calculators to figure out when the next full moon would be on Christmas Eve. And they found that to be another 120 years or so. So when I was meeting with my family members, I was explaining just how synchronized everything is in this universe. They were able to find out when the next full moon is going to be on Christmas Eve. Everything is so organized. So they were appreciative how God's creation is so systematic, so organized. But I have one brother, an older brother, who's an atheist. And I had a lot of respect for him. He's very intelligent. But he couldn't appreciate it. So he said, it's law, it's the law of gravity, that's why it's happening. No God, it's law, it's the law of gravity. So, I just ignored accept it, and I'll release it. And then again he shouted, it's law. So they shouted back at him, yes, it's law. He said, I said, it's the law of God. It's God's law. He said, oh, I thought it was the law of gravity. Newton's law of gravity. So I said to him, was the law there before Newton? He wouldn't answer. So I said, was the law there before Newton? Finally, he said, yeah. So they get this, you know, the law of gravity, Newton's law of gravity. They were as though he created the gravity of something. But actually, Newton, he was a religious person. But he had some friends, scientists that were atheists. So he made this model of the universe in his basement. Pretty amazing model of the universe. Spent a lot of time, did a good job. He had some of his science friends there at the house, and he said, hey, I want to show you something. So he took them down the basement. Turned on the light. He showed this amazing presence of the universe. And I'm like, wow, look at that. That's amazing. You don't have this. Who did this? You don't have this ability. Who did this? They were like, who did this? They were like, who did this? No. Newton just said, oh, it's superior. One day I came down, and it was just here. Pretty good job you did here. Who did this? No, I'm just kidding. And then he said, well, so what you guys are saying about the universe, but it disappeared. The Big Bang disappeared. No intelligence behind it. So it was a there was a really good argument with some of the indication theists in that presentation. So it's just, you know, so many ridiculous ideas, so much cheating. And therefore, so many times the scientists will say, perhaps, or maybe, you know, happened this time, just like they say the Big Bang thing happened like 17 billion, perhaps 17 billion years ago, maybe 17 billion years ago. It's all so much speculation. Big Bang. When there's a Big Bang, what happens? Destruction, chaos. So you can imagine if we put a huge pile of wood here in the parking lot, huge pile of wood, and you put some sinks in there, you throw some wires in there, you know, throw some toilets in there, put some dynamite under it, and blow it up, and it goes flying 300 meters into the air, and it lands into a very beautiful house. What are the chances? What are the chances? Not going to happen. You can try it billions of times, and each time, it's not going to turn out to be a nice house. So that's what they're thinking, you know, by chance. Like I asked my brother, same brother. I asked him, so, this is before this meeting at Christmas Eve. So I asked him, so how did everything come about? He said, by chance. And up to that point, I thought he was very intelligent. But then I thought, come on, this creation, it's amazing. Prabhupada once said that you just look at a flower. You just look at a flower long enough and you'll understand there must be a God. Because there's so many artists all around the world, they're painting so many flowers. And some of them are really good. It takes a long time. And they don't smell very nice, especially right after they're done. They really smell bad. So Krishna, from dirt, he has these beautiful flowers coming out. And not only are they beautiful, but they smell so nice. It's like in the LA temple, we have these nice bloomy jasmines. And you wake up in the morning, and it's just like, just get an idea of what it smells like, what the fragrance of the spiritual world. It's so nice. And there's one nice statement by Kapila. He says the chariots of the wind carries the aroma of flower to a person nearby and catches his sense of smell. Similarly, Krishna, who is nearby, the devotee who is engaged in devotional service, is caught by that devotion of the devotee. So this is how we catch the Supreme Lord, by devotional service. Not easy to catch Krishna. But it's an interesting analogy there. Chariot of the wind carries the aroma of the flower and catches the person nearby. So it's like they can get caught. You walk around, you smell some nice scent, a nice scent of this flower. It's like, wow, so nice. So this is Krishna. Krishna is the supreme artist. He makes a flower, and it's so beautiful and fragrant. Like the lotus. Do you ever get lotus? Do you have lotus around? The lotus flower is awesome. They grow in Los Angeles. They smell just like candy. They're so sweet. Amazing. So this is Krishna. He makes these beautiful flowers and they also smell very nice. He's so much. He's doing so much. So we should understand that there's someone behind all this. And the more we understand the greatness of Krishna, the more we will appreciate Krishna. And Prabhupada mentioned in one purport that the more we try to develop our love for Krishna, the more we will understand how much Krishna loves us. Krishna is such he's so kind. He's an ocean of mercy. And therefore, no matter what we do, no matter what we do, Krishna will always be waiting. Krishna is also very patient. It's one of the qualities of the devotee. Krishna is also very patient. He's waiting and waiting for us to turn to him. Even someone can become as degraded as Hitler or Stalin or who's the bad guy in Africa? So Krishna also, he doesn't leave him. Even though someone is so degraded, such a bad person, Krishna is just waiting for them to turn to him. And they go to hell. Krishna is also there with them. Wherever the soul goes, Krishna is there, patiently waiting for us to turn to him. So this is the mercy of Krishna. So again, about this genie, Srila Prabhupada, he was very disturbed that there's so much genie going on. So he wanted to establish the pure religious principles. And he said one time, he said he wanted to establish two things. First, that life comes from light. Like people think that life is coming from matter, therefore there's this book, Life Comes from Light. Very nice arguments how life comes from light. So, but the scientists are saying that life comes from matter, therefore they're trying to create life. But, no success. They come up with this notion that life comes from matter, but there's no proof of it. Again, there's no observable evidence. So people are being cheated by these people. So life comes from light, and there's life after death. They're thinking that everything is finished. And body dies, that's it. Even Prabhupada was in Russia, and he was talking to one professor, Kutovsky, who was actually the scholar of the Vedas. And he knew so much. Prabhupada was impressed with him so much. But then he said, Swamiji, at the end of his life, it's over. That's it. Prabhupada was shocked. And he knew so much, the Vedic, but he came to the conclusion that at the end of his life, it's all over. It's no continuation of the soul. So, so much teaching is going on. And even in circles of so-called Swamis or Babajis, it's like when Gorkha showed up Babaji, when he passed away, so many Babajis, they wanted to take his body and put it at their mat. Because they knew that if I have him at my mat, then so many people will come. And then when they come, they give donations. Money. So, when Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur heard that he had passed away, he went to the spot. They were just trying to get his body. And there were so many Babajis, they were trying to take his body. So Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur, he had a good argument. He said, I'm the only disciple of Gorkha Shodas Babaji. So I should take his body. But then they said, but you're a brahmachari. And then he said, anybody amongst you, it might have been dozens of anyone amongst you who has not had some illicit affair with another woman for the past year can come forward and touch his body and save his body. He said, 6 months. Anybody amongst you, 6 months, has not had some illicit affair, can come and take his body. 1 month, 1 week, 3 days, anybody amongst you within the last 3 days that has not had an illicit affair will even touch his body. What if you do? And you're not honest in your new reaction. There was a constable there. He said, how are you going to believe them? He said, I'll take their word. I'll take their word. And they all put their head down and walked away. Amazing. Here they are. So this is Kali Yuga. Kali, Kalera, Bhavina, Indriya, Vairava, Sri Bhakti Marvike, Kantika, Koti Muna. Prabodhana Saraswati Thakur, he says, in this Kali Yuga, it's been very difficult to control the senses. Very difficult. And in this age, the path of bhakti is spiked by billions of authority obstacles. It's very difficult to advance spiritual life in Kali Yuga if we don't have good guidance. But if we have good guidance, then it's possible. We're so fortunate. We should count our blessings that we have Srila Prabhupada as our guide. There's so much teaching. Therefore, Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur, another amazing example, mentioned to Brahmacharya. He said, this world is made up of the cheaters. Some people, they want to be cheated. Some people, they want to cheat. So, we're so fortunate. So then Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur, he took the transcendental body of Gorkha Shodas Babaji. Another amazing example. So many great things body for him. The Prabhupada was interested in purity. Purity is the force, not this chief type of the Dharma. There was one disciple of Prabhupada who wanted to change our system. Instead of having four regulations, it was three regulations. Because this illicit sex, I mentioned this earlier. So even amongst Prabhupada's disciples, they're trying to cheat. Prabhupada sometimes is sick. Purity is the force. So to be pure is the greatest challenge that we'll ever face. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he said there's five austerities of the mind. Mana prasada kshom yadvam bhavna atma vinigra bhava tam sriti pitat tapo marupushite. To be satisfied in Krishna consciousness is an austerity of the mind. And there's so much opportunity for sense gratification here in Nairobi, all over the world. But if you refrain from that, you don't do that, but you engage in Krishna conscious activity, it's very good. There's an austerity of the mind to be satisfied in Krishna consciousness. And a lot of people that join our Krishna consciousness movement, they're not able to remain satisfied, and they leave. So many have left. So to be satisfied is an austerity of the mind. Mana prasada sonya, to be honest, another austerity of the mind. Not to be knowing, to be honest with others, but to be honest with ourselves. Sometimes we have this idea that we're some type of exalted devotee or something. But no, we have to be honest that we're conditioned souls, just trying to be Krishna conscious, be a good soul, be a pure soul. Prabhupada once had in a lecture, he said, a devotee is so honest that if a thief comes to him and says, how much money do you have? He'll tell him. I had to rewind that to make sure I said it wrong. This is how honest a devotee is. So if he's that honest, we'll just speak of the other things. And Yudhisthira, he's famous as one devotee that never told a lie. So that doesn't say much for everybody else. We have one person that's famous because he never told a lie. Everybody else is a liar. So there's black lies and there's white lies. So Manasar is only in the mona atma to be grave. It's an austerity. Mind can control the tongue. The tongue wants to talk this and talk that stuff. But to be grave, it's an austerity. Mona Patma Vigraha, to control the mind, yes, to control the mind. There's another austerity, to control the mind. But the most difficult, Bhava Samstirviti, to have a pure mind. That's the greatest challenge, to have a pure mind. And when we have a pure mind, pure heart, then we're satisfied. But as long as we're impure, with an impure mind, with an impure heart, we're not satisfied. But this is where the real satisfaction is. Everybody wants satisfaction. Be satisfied in life. There's so much dissatisfaction. Therefore, there's a famous song. I don't know, probably have it here. Can't get no satisfaction. And they would sing along, all the youth. Yeah, I can't get no satisfaction. Couldn't get any satisfaction. So in the material world, we can't find ultimate satisfaction. It's not possible. But in the spiritual life, we'll find it. Therefore, Prabhupada, he was walking one time with some devotees, and there was a garbage can. Called dustbin. And Anand said, please put your trash here. And Brahma said, then you'll have to put the whole material world. Because the material world is trash. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that this is no place for a gentleman. No place for a gentleman. For a lady. Not a man. Prabhupada said this material world is the bathroom of Krishna's creation. So in the bathroom, we don't make nice arrangements, right? We just go in there, do our business, and get out. No one tries to make a real nice arrangement in the bathroom. It's a place where you just do your business. So that was the superior word. We should do our business and get out. And what is our business? To become pure again. To revive our pure mind. We also have a pure mind. It's like there's a pure soul that's covered by the pure desire. So we have a pure mind also in the spiritual world. They have a mind. It's so just thinking, should I take care of this? Should I take care of the milk boiling now, or should I continue feeding Krishna? Stop feeding Krishna, took care of the boiling milk, and then, you know, yeah, this whole Radha Damodar. So she's thinking about what to do. So they also have, but they have a pure mind. So we also have a pure mind, but now it's dormant, covered by this impure mind. So this process of Krishna consciousness is to revive the pure mind, to revive the pure soul. And then we'll be satisfied. But until then, we won't be fully satisfied. So, on that note, any questions? Yes? Yes, the Vaishnava, he is engaged in devotional service. The Brahmana may be engaged in devotional service or may not be engaged in devotional service. There's the Brahmana, there's many Brahmanas that are just very much absorbed in Buddha's mantras, but may not be interested in devotional service to Krishna. And there's even Brahmanas that are atheists. But a Vaishnava is someone who worships Krishna. Or Vishnu. So automatically they're Brahmanas. Because that they have that pure desire. It's automatic. The Brahmana is. Vaishnava wants to be greater than God? Well, that's a very esoteric subject matter. Because once one becomes a really, really pure Vaishnava, a pure devotee of the Lord, he goes back to the spiritual world, or she goes back to the spiritual world, and you have a situation like this, where Yasoda is feeling superior to Krishna, greater than Krishna. And therefore, it's feel that her duty to punish Krishna and Krishna's like this much more than Brahma is chanting prayers. So, in one sense, and actually, Prabhupada mentions that the greatest exhibition of Krishna's glory is when he becomes subordinate to his devotee. That's the greatest exhibition of his glory. But he doesn't have to. He's independent. He doesn't have to be tied up by the Yasoda. But upon seeing her devotion, he allows, just like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that when Mother Yasoda was trying to tie Krishna up, she was always 2 fingers too short. And she was getting tons of rope from all around her dub, and still was, she was like, what's going on? And all the ladies are laughing, you know, come on, Mother Yasoda, you can't tie up Krishna, can't you tell? You've got so much rope, you can't tie him up. And she's like, no, I'm going to tie him up. He's been a naughty boy, I don't care. I've got to get all the rope from her dub, I'm going to tie him up. So she's getting tired now. So then Krishna, he said, all right, go ahead and tie me up. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he says these 2 fingers are the determination of the devotee and the mercy of Krishna. So we have to be very, very determined, like Mother Yasoda, to capture Krishna. Krishna, he wants to be captured, actually. He wants to be captured. He wants us to become pure devotees. not easy. The Kalyana, he was trying to capture Krishna. But he was a Yavana, very bougie. But Krishna didn't want to be touched by him. So he's running away, Ranjor, he's running away with Krishna. And Kalyavana, he's so close to Krishna, it's like he's like an arm, he's like a hand, he can almost trap him, he just can't quite get him. And Krishna's just like, you know, nonchalantly just walking along, you know, like, and he's, you know, Kalyavana's like running like, I just can't capture him, can't do it. So, if Krishna doesn't want to be captured, he won't be. But the only way that we can capture Krishna is by pure devotion. So that's why this Bhakti Mara was emphasized so much by Prabhupada. Dravida books, Dravida lectures. This is how to capture Krishna. There is no other way to capture. The only way to capture Krishna through devotion. And it's there. It's just in a Krishna frame. It's there. It's just dormant. Just like in wood, there's fire. You just have to put the fire there and it comes out. So the love is here, and what we're doing in this bhakti marg path, what we're trying to ignite, trying to bring out this devotion that's there. And this comes out by chanting Hare Krishna, by hearing about Krishna, associating with devotees, this devotion. Yes.
About creation of Bhakti, the Lord of the Rada Chana, the creator of the Lord, and those monks that are completely tired, and they have to go to the Lord's Bhakti.
No. Actually, the creation is for that purpose, for us to get purified. Krishna, it's not this ridiculous Big Bang theory. Krishna, he creates Mahavishnu by his desire. And from Mahavishnu's own, the universe is come out. So that's how the universe is created. There's a person behind it. And everything is being carried out, maintained by Vishnu. He's in the heart of everyone. He's everywhere. So he's maintaining everything. And as far as the evolution theory, no, Hanuman actually, he was a great devotee of Krishna. And it's not that he evolved and there was no extinction. No, this is, and therefore this whole crazy idea of evolution theory, they say that man came from the monkey, right? But we still have monkeys and we still have human beings. If that were the case, then eventually there would be more monkeys and there would be human beings. But no, we see there's monkeys and there's human beings. But what they say is no, it's a particular type of monkey that we evolved from, and that particular monkey no longer exists. He turned into human. That is, there's just so much speculation. It's ridiculous. It's like, you just want to vomit, you know. So disgusting. And people buy it. Very so-called intelligent people, they buy this. But I'll tell you why they come up with these ideas. Because what is the other idea? Another ridiculous idea is in the Bible, it says that the earth is 7,000 years old. So they got to come up with some other idea. So this is the idea they came up with. Another ridiculous idea. From one ridiculous idea to another ridiculous idea. So, fortunately, the absolute truth. Okay? Thank you very much. See the Prabhupada.